Like, give or take a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And an editing session.
All right, everybody. Welcome to BC is Creepy. I'm Topher Graham.
I'm Ariel Hansen.
And...
oh, I need to close the door. I just realized.
Close it.
Don't want that Warcraft music getting in here and giving us copyright issues.
You're letting in all the creepies.
What?
So, today...
it's a Topher Day!
It's a Topher Day. And, I'm gonna preface this by, saying, 2 weeks ago, we had a little party, a cast and crew screening for our latest project, the Bad Cookie Combo.
My mom visited from Victoria along with my dad.
And she actually gave me this wonderful book called British Columbia Murders.
Yeah, it's from her work at the, gift shop at the museum in Victoria.
So I found a very special tale, and I promise I'm leaving Vancouver, but I'm doing another murder, because I read this chapter and I couldn't get it out of my brain. So
So now you're forcing me to not do murder next week.
You can do all sorts of things. You're really good at that. But I'm going to do an awesome murder from 1904 in Victoria.
Alrighty, let's hear it.
So in 1904, in Chinatown, there was a fellow by the name of Man Kuang. He was an actor and manager for the Chinese Theater in Theater Alley, which was off Cormorant Street and right close to Fantan Alley. So you know Victoria, you've been to the area.
Yeah.
Chinatown, it's pretty cool now.
Yeah. Do you know if it's parallel or perpendicular to Fantan Alley?
It's just says that it's off Cormorant Street.
Okay, I will accept that answer.
So Theater Alley, I've talked to Ariel about this, apparently doesn't exist anymore.
As far as I remember, it doesn't.
That's okay. Chinatown at this time was, like, not a great place. It had a lot of crime.
Opium!
Yeah, well, opium was legal. And causing a lot of problems. They had a lot of, like, gambling houses. They had a network of alleyways and courtyards under the street fronts, and they called it, like, the Forbidden City. And
oh, yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, we wouldn't have been allowed there.
No, probably not.
And Chinatown was also home to things called tongs that were like secret societies and social groups, but also gangs. And this was a really understandable thing for that culture back then because it was very like, they were
tight,
isolated.
Yeah.
They're away from home and they want like familiar people around them, people that they can trust.
Yeah, so. Well, that's why you get, like, in most cities, you get, like, a Chinatown and a Little Italy and, like, we've got Little Saigon and other places that are just immigrants have gathered together with people who they all know the same language, and that's just natural.
Yeah, so this went, like, one step further, and these were, like, there's tongs that were labor groups in China, or tongues that were business orientated in China. Yeah. There was a lot of like rivalries between these gangs. And I also found, anyways, let's get back to the Chinese theater.
Yeah, and what was his name again?
Man Kuang.
Man Kuang.
And so he was an actor and he was a manager and he ran this Chinese theater. Chinese theater was like, it was pretty poor. It would have been like a big room with a lot of benches.
Yep.
And some hanging lights, and actors would come in and they'd put on plays that were almost episodic. Like,
okay.
They were a lot like
Penny Dreadfuls?
Soap operas.
Okay.
So not a lot of like costume or set pieces, a lot of talking and characters.
And drama!
Drama!
They gotta get you coming back next week.
Yeah. All male cast, usually. Well, most of the immigrants were men, too, because...
okay. It gets my gears that, like, back in the day, women weren't allowed to perform in theater for, like, a lot of cultures. And it's like, why? Why are you having men parading around?
Do women stuff. But I could see it being, like, a real, like, in Chinatown, mostly it was men who were immigrate, and then they'd be sending money home
to their
families. Because there's, like, a 500-person head tax every year on people. So it was, like, really expensive just to, like, live in Vancouver.
And Victoria.
Right, we're in Victoria for this one.
What'd you drink? There's a fruit fly.
Oh, jeez. Get away. I've got sherry for this
Sherry! This one. And I've got beer. I like beer.
I don't. So that's why I always have that.
I just saw at the liquor store when I was there today. They've got spiked root beer and another thing that was also something you would have probably liked.
Lemonade?
No, it was something weird. Not weird, but like less expected.
I've had a lot of weird mixed drinks, like margaritas.
Margaritas aren't weird.
Okay, but there was also this one that I had in Mexico, and I can't even explain it, but it was like lime and like grenadine and some sort of red liquor that I don't recognize, and like a salt.
Okay.
But like in a can.
Oh.
But digressing.
Yes.
So Kwong had been receiving threats, and he was pretty scared, and he wouldn't leave his house except in the company of friends or broad daylight because he was so like traumatized about these threats. And on January 31st, Kwong decided to bring his friends to the theater after the show to have like just a night of like, I missed being out. I want to hang out with my friends.
Yeah.
So the show ended at midnight. His friends came at 12:30 for some drinking, some eating, some opium. And as reported, around 1:30 a.m., there's a loud knock on the door and two men force the doors open. They beat Kwong with iron bars and fling him onto the stage where he breaks through a table.
Oh no!
Yeah. His friends put him up on a bed. They call the police. They get him to the hospital, and he dies in the hospital 6 a.m. that morning.
Oh. Now, so the theater, is the audience primarily Chinese, or is it like anyone comes and sees it?
I'm sure anybody could have come to see it, but just because of the community, it would have been like in Chinese.
Okay.
So it would have been like four Chinese people.
Okay.
This was essentially like television of the day. Like, you could come see the show on Monday, and you'd see the same characters doing like a different thing on Friday, and like...
Yeah, I was just sort of wondering how insular it was of an activity, or if it was like maybe some rich white person was watching it and was like, I don't like that actor.
Would be something crazy, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, there is some surprises about the actors.
Oh.
A little later on.
Okay, well, I'll let you get back to telling me what's up.
So, Constable George Carson was first on the scene, and later in the morning, George Perdue, the detective, was added to the investigation. That guy is really cool, George Perdue, but later. So, as it's reported, Kwong's friends said that while he was dying, Kwong knew his assailants and named them and begged for them to be arrested. And the one that was named was Wong Yuan, a musician at the theater who had recently got a pay cut.
Oh.
Yeah.
So someone would be bitter.
Mm-hmm. And he actually couldn't be found after the murder, but...
even more suspicious.
Yeah. Two of his cohorts, Wong Ong and Wong Gao, were found and identified by witnesses as the two that assaulted Kwong. So they were promptly arrested and put on trial for murder.
Okay.
One of the witnesses was Ha Fat Chung, and so he's really interesting because of how he held up the courts to be a witness. So back in 1904, we had a Christian oath for Christians in the courts, and we had several alternative oaths for non-Christians. And one of the Chinese ones is called the chicken oath.
Okay.
So,
like, is it if you break this oath, we're gonna go...
So they take a piece of paper.
Okay.
They write the oath on the piece of paper.
Okay.
They chop the chicken's head off, and then they burn the piece of paper.
What? That is weird.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I guess as long as they eat the chicken.
I'm not sure. Like, but apparently there was a dispute over whether the defense should pay for this chicken or the prosecution should pay for the chicken. They settled on, I think, the prosecution paying for it.
Why didn't they just split it 50-50?
I don't know. Maybe he should have had to pay for it if he's going to bear witness.
What? No, because... I mean, if you're a witness in a trial, depending on which side brings you in, which side you're going to benefit.
So he would have been a witness for the prosecution.
Okay.
So he came on and he identified the Wongs as the assailants after several days of holding up the court trying to find this chicken.
How hard is it to find a chicken?
It was pretty crazy. So Fat Chung took the stand and named the Wongs as the assailants, and he was among eight other witnesses who all swore that they were the ones that beat Kwong with metal bars. And so these were like people from the party who were going on as witnesses.
Okay.
The defense also presented a couple witnesses, a couple that said that Wong On was elsewhere during the murder.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like late at night, so hard to say.
Yeah.
But there was also some, like, contradictory physical evidence.
Oh.
Yeah. So they brought in this fellow named Dr. Davy, who stated, "Nobody could be beaten with iron bars and have no marks show on the body."
Oh.
So now we've got some, like, weird stuff going on where we have witnesses pointing to two assailants who came in, beat Kwong Ong with metal bars, threw him over onto the stage and he didn't have any marks on the body from the metal bars.
Because, like, he'd also have marks from probably hitting the table on the stage, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh! And, like, physical evidence is harder to refute than witness testimony, because people's memories get jumbled so easily.
Yeah, that would be great. Except, on May 9th, the jury found the two Wongs guilty and sentenced them to be hanged for July 22nd.
I'm guessing there's more to this, since that would make for a very short episode.
Right. So, you bring back Detective Perdue.
Okay, I thought you were going to say to bring back the KKK.
Wouldn't that be something? So the KKK just smashed in and, like, beat everybody up, and we didn't have anybody left, and the end.
And then, because then it would be going after those KKK members and figuring out who they were and killing, prosecuting them.
Yeah.
And probably finding them guilty and killing them.
Or the KKK members turn out to be cops and then the whole thing goes away.
Oh, that's a lot worse than my scenario. I don't like your scenario.
Yeah. Episode one. Episode one.
I know.
KKK cops. But no, Detective Perdue. Our own little, like, Ross Perot.
I didn't read whatever that...
Agatha Christie.
I didn't read Agatha Christie.
But you should have seen, like, the plays or the movies.
No,
or...
haven't seen none of it.
Well, there's this great trope where detectives come in and they solve the murder, even though it looks like it's going to be another way, but it's actually a huge twist.
Ooh.
And this is our fellow Detective Perdue, who's going to come in and do it exactly that. So he'd become very suspicious after hearing the defense's argument, as one should be. He set out to do more work on the case, and the doctor's testimony especially hit home, because they had the bars.
Yeah.
They had the physical evidence of the bars. But the bars themselves had no evidence that they were used to assault Kwong.
Ah.
So we have, like, thick iron bars. He allegedly had gotten beat with them.
Yep.
So you gotta be thinking, like, maybe some bruising, maybe some, like, bleeding. Yep. Nothing on the bars. And he also heard rumors that the Wongs had been railroaded to the gallows. So this is a term, like, somebody's sending them there.
Oh, okay, so someone wanted vengeance.
Yeah, so he's gonna find out the real motive for the murders. He no longer believes the story about the musician who got their pay cut.
Yeah.
And he actually learned that the main dispute surrounding Kwong's death,
mm-hmm,
was a feud between two rival Tongs.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Gang warfare.
So there's two in play here. There's the Siyup and the Samyup. One of them is laborers, and one of them is businessmen, and they're not friendly with each other at all, clearly. So members from both these Tongs have been cast to act in Kwong's play,
mm-hmm,
and it really boils down to two actors who had a fight scene together.
Ooh.
So the Samyup actor had purposely, like, injured the Siyup actor during a choreographed fight.
Oh, man. Because, like, when, at least nowadays as an actor, if you've got, like, a fight scene or, like, a scene where you're really freaking out at each other and stuff, you sort of make a contract with the other actor beforehand of, like, this is what you can do to me, this is what you can't. Like, so that's a total betrayal of that trust and everything. And I would hope that the actor who injured the other one would, like, no one would want to work with them after that. But,
well,
who knows?
Probably not. But anyways, the actor who got injured goes back to the C-Up gang and says, I was hurt. This is bullshit. I need somebody to come out here and cover my ass. So the C-Ups go to Kwong and they say, you have to pay to erase the insult, and you have to pay a lot. So he's making payments, and he's skeptical, and he's hesitant, and slow to make the payments until he stops making payments. He's getting warnings. And eventually they come and they kill him.
Ah, so he wasn't paying protection money, basically.
Yeah, he stopped paying his money. They gave him warnings. Then they sent people to kill him and frame the Wongs, who incidentally were part of the rival gang, the C-Ups.
Incidentally.
The Sam-Ups. So Purdue discovered all this. And that the real culprits, the people who murdered Kwong, were the 8 guests at his party. So he brought the 8 guests to trial for conspiring to secure the conviction of Wong Ong and Wong Gao for the murder of Man Kwong on January 31st, 1904, by procuring false evidence. That was the charge, because he couldn't prove that they were complicit in the murder.
Yeah.
But he was trying to go for the conspiracy charge, and there was a little bit of bribery. Some of them were told they would be given $100 to bear witness and testimony.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's... Now, at this point, have the two guys who got convicted been hung?
Nope.
Okay, good.
We're not there yet.
Oh.
They were retried and found not guilty.
Okay.
But also on December 21st, 1904, because you didn't wait for my happy ending, you get the unhappy ending that all the 8 guests were also found not guilty.
Oh. Huh.
So, justice.
I mean, if you don't, I guess, if you don't have enough evidence, like, it's better to...
Like, the evidence that they were going in the original trial was literally just witness testimony.
Yeah, that should, like, that just straight up shouldn't have gone to trial.
Yeah. But this is 1904 in Chinatown.
Yeah. Well, this is also just 1904.
Yeah.
They didn't understand how unreliable witness testimony is anyways.
To be fair, physical forensics was not a thing.
Exactly.
Everything was done by just, like, grunt police work. Asking, talking, trying to figure out clues and putting everything together.
It was the... Well, it was like what you see in the old detective shows.
Yeah.
Following a lead.
I love detective shows.
I like things where there's weird stuff.
It's because you haven't read Agatha Christie.
No, it's not. I'm a slow reader anyways.
They're like the smallest book.
It has taken me, like, the book that I'm reading right now, I've been reading for over a year.
So, I've gotten this story from an amazing book called British Columbia Murders, Notorious Cases and Unsolved Mysteries by Susan McNichol. And I did a little bit of additional research just to try and get an idea of, like, what Chinatown was like in the era and what the chicken oath was all about.
Yeah, that that just is so weird.
Yeah, but that was my main source this episode. Incredible book. I'm really enjoying it.
Also, I don't know if you researched this, but just what I'd be curious about was, like, if the witness, like, did they have translators there? Were the witness testimonies in English or in either Mandarin or Cantonese? Like,
I can't speak to that specifically.
Yeah.
But I know when he was doing the chicken oath, he specifically requested to be able to do the oath in
Cantonese or Mandarin?
I can't say either way.
One of the two.
One of the two, but he specifically asked for the oath not to be done in English.
Yeah.
But his oath was worth nothing anyways, so that chicken died for nothing.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna also say, like if they made them testify in English, and English wasn't their first language, yeah, that would make for a very awkward trial situation.
Absolutely. No, my guess is that they must have had translators.
Okay. Yeah. That would make sense.
Yeah. So I got this book from our Bad Cookie Combo Party, where we also showed our VR film, Tune In for Murder.
Oh, yeah.
Felt like it was, now is a really good time to plug it, since it's a murder mystery with its own detective.
Yeah, yeah. But a twist!
But a twist! It recently played at YVRFF, and...
which is the Vancouver VR Film Festival. Yeah, we shared it at the Vancouver VR Community Fair.
Science Fair, yeah.
I think the official name is just a fair, but yeah, it was like a science fair style event crossed with like a a convention atmosphere. It was really cool. We showed both our VR films.
Yeah.
But of course, you were definitely pushing yours.
I'm always pushing mine. We're looking at an opportunity to get it out to the public.
Yeah.
Keep your ears open and eyes peeled.
On the Bad Cookie social media, where we will definitely be announcing it if and when it happens.
Mm-hmm. So we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon. We have a website, we have an email, and it's always Bad Cookie Pictures.
We're also on YouTube. You might actually know this if you're listening on YouTube, but the podcast is also on iTunes and Google Play. We're trying to get it on Spotify as well, so we don't know if it's on there yet at this point. But yeah, you can support us on Patreon if you'd like, which brings us to shout-outs.
Yeah. Because
we've got another patron.
No.
Yeah, Kate Ferguson is a coolio, and she's now a patron of Bad Cookie Pictures.
Thank you. You're incredible.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to push?
Not really at the moment, I guess. I mean, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Hanson's Horror. I use the same thing for all those for ease. And Topher's on Instagram.
Yeah. If you're in Vancouver, we're going to be playing at Cinema Fantastique in August.
Yeah, I guess by the time this comes out, that won't be too far away.
No.
Yeah, Paint the Town Red, as well as Time Heals No Wounds, are both going to be playing there. It's, oh God, is it the, I want to say the 25th?
I think so.
Yeah, 25th, 24th, or 26th. One of those days.
At Van City Theater.
Yeah. And if you go on the Cinema Fantastique website, you'll definitely be able to tell what day it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's looking to be like it'll be a good show. Yeah. Let's see. Anything else to talk about before we sign off?
That's all for me.
That's all for you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, in that case,
stay creepy, Vancouver. BC.
Just remember to stay creepy.